Welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Sarah Jacob. India is now home to 8 African cheetahs. 7 decades after the Asian cheetah went extinct in India, India is undertaking an ambitious project to reintroduce the big cats, starting from Madhya Pradesh's Kuno National Park. Kicking off his 72nd birthday, the Prime Minister this morning released 3 cheetahs of these eight into the Kuno National Park. These big cats have been brought to India from Namibia as part of an intercontinental translocation project. India in the past was home to the Asiatic cheetahs, but the species was declared extinct domestically in the 50s. The Kuno Park was selected as a home because of, we're told, its abundant prey and grasslands. However, critics have warned that the cheetahs may struggle to adapt to the habitat and they may clash with a significant number of leopards already present there. Now, the African Cheetah Introduction Project in India was conceived in 2009 and a plan to introduce the big cat by November last year into the Kuno National Park was delayed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, officials have said, and considered vulnerable under the IUCN Red List of Threatened Species. There are fewer than 7,000 cheetahs left in the world, and most of them are primarily in the African savannas. Radio collars have been strapped on all these cheetahs. They are going to be monitored now through via satellite. There's a dedicated monitoring team behind each cheetah, which will be monitoring their movements round the clock going forward. So, while this is a historic moment for Indian conservation, the cheetahs have, quote, come home. But will they survive? And what are the challenges ahead for the African cheetah to survive here in Kuno, India? All right, and joining us now is one of the world's leading observers of the African cheetah, naturalist and conservationist Valmik Thapar. He's also coming out with a book on the cheetah. Valmik Thapar, thank you so much for your time. You've been observing cheetah behavior for years and you've been studying them for years. Mr. Thapar, there's been enough debated over whether this is an ambitious project, a harebrained scheme or not. I don't want to talk about that, whether it's a sound scheme or not. The cheetahs are here. We have called you in, asked you on NDTV to try and understand what is needed in order to make sure that these beautiful creatures survive and thrive in this transcontinental location. So the question now is, what is needed to make sure that this species can adapt, can rewild, breed and thrive and actually become part of this new landscape into which they have been introduced? So Mr. Thapar, my first question to you, you know, this area was originally meant to be a lion habitat, was it not? We wanted to relocate the lions from Gir here. Now it is a cheetah habitat. Are the two interchangeable in terms of terrain, weather, prey availability, predator exposure?
Let me start by saying that the cheetah as a big cat is very close to my heart. It is a magnificent cat. It is beautiful, elegant, but highly fragile, highly delicate, and needs great amounts of space to live freely and escape all its threats. Now, coming to Kuno Palpur, it was to be the second home of the Asiatic lion. And the reason was that we needed a second population to prevent a disease from wiping the first population in Gir National Park in Gujarat. But the Gujarat government did not allow any lion to leave the state of Gujarat. So over the years and the changes of governments, with the wisdom of various people who've promoted the African cheetah coming to India, it's got to be now a habitat for African cheetahs. I don't believe this is the way to do things, because if you brought lions there, hyenas and leopards would keep away from the lions. If you bring cheetahs there, hyenas and leopards are the key enemies of cheetahs. If you visit Africa, single-spotted hyenas will chase away cheetahs, will bite cheetahs and kill cheetahs. I'm not even talking about a pack here. I'm talking about single animals. Lions will take away the food of cheetahs whenever they get an opportunity and kill cheetahs. And I've watched this with my own eyes. Leopards are the biggest threat to cheetahs. So Kunupalpur is an area of leopards. So my issue here is that when you develop Kunupalpur, when you bring 6,400 square kilometers to its ideal shape, your population of leopards and hyenas and even wolves will go up. And these are all enemies of your 5 to 10 to 15 cheetahs, which you're introducing in the first years, which may go up to 35. So it's a huge problem for any forest officer, expert or conservationist to find a path in a minefield of obstacles.
So it's an uphill task. You are running against the wind. But, you know, Mr. Thapar, you mentioned leopards and hyenas as the greatest enemies or, let's say, predators for the cheetah. But when this lion relocation was nixed, the reason given was also, one of the reasons given was the presence of tigers. That was cited as the reason for, you know, the failure to make the switch. Is that no longer a concern apart from leopards and hyenas?
The tiger is a concern, but it's an occasional concern. Tigers from Ranthambore once a year will come through a corridor to Kunupalpur and they will spend time there. So if you're asking me to give you a kind of safeguard for Kunupalpur, I would stop and close that corridor, never allow a tiger into Kunupalpur. I would convert a lot of the woodland in Kunupalpur into grassland, which is not allowed by the law. I would reduce the population of leopards and hyenas by relocating them, but that's not allowed by the law. I would have to resettle 160 villages in a 6,200 square kilometer landscape and get rid of all the village dogs and packs, because village dogs will tear apart the cheetah. And that will not be acceptable to animal activists and the wolves. Within 100 kilometers of Kunupalpur, we have 150 wolves in Kela Devi, part of Ranthambore Tiger Reserve. So it's a big problem. And we've got to find a way around it to keep these cheetahs alive.
So a high price to pay, because you are then, you have to evaluate whether it's cheetahs on one hand versus all of these other species on the other hand that are, you know, natural to India. But, you know, you mentioned in your first answer the space that the cheetahs need. You know, Mr. Thapar, when we grew up, when you think of cheetahs, you think of them dashing across this gorgeous terrain. When we grew up learning that they're the fastest animal on the planet, one thinks they need open space, obviously, some shrub, some cover as they approach their prey, take them by surprise, because we know general knowledge taught us as we were growing up that they're sprinters, their bodies do overheat. Do we have that kind of terrain, sir, in Kuno?
You see,
because the reserve that I've seen, and I haven't seen that many in India, are very thickly forested.
When I watch them in the Serengeti, there is unlimited space. You can run 20 kilometers and it's the space that keeps the cheetah safe from lions, from hyenas, from leopards, because it can run away and no animal can chase it or get hold of it. Now, in Kunupalpur, I said earlier that unless you convert some of the woodland into grassland and create those spaces, it's a problem, because the cheetah is facing obstacle courses with bushes, trees. He has to turn around corners, stony ground, not soft ground. All these issues will come to the fore in 3 months. At the moment, the cheetahs are in small enclosures. These are quarantine enclosures. Then they'll be shifted to another enclosure, which is a 10 square kilometer enclosure. And finally, they will be released. But when they're finally released, don't forget, the cheetahs walk a lot. Cheetahs have been known to walk 150 kilometers in a few days. Cheetahs can have an area of 2,000 square kilometers in the Serengeti. They've been found from one end of the Serengeti to another. So you have to watch these animals. And can you imagine the teams that are going to be involved 24/7 to go after and follow these cheetahs to make sure that they are living, that they are fully safeguarded, that nothing happens to them? I think it's a huge, huge challenge, a huge task. And I'm not sure why we are undertaking it at this level, because we have a lot of problems with our indigenous species. It will be at the cost of some of our indigenous species. And we need to find a balance with what we are doing and what we have.
Mr. Thapar, you know, I have to admit, I was distracted by this beautiful footage that you have shot and when you've been at the Serengeti. And there was this stunning footage of these two leopards, I think. Almost, they look like they were playfully catching this deer, which leads me to ask you, this tiny deer, like an antelope.
There were two cheetahs who are sub-adults who were patting a Thompson's gazelle, and that's how they learn to hunt. The mother
it
disables the animal.
It looked like this beautiful dance. They're such delicate and, you know, so light on their feet. But that leads me to ask you, Mr. Thapar, what do African cheetahs eat normally, and what will they be eating, or what are they preying on here in Madhya Pradesh? Who are the prey here in Kuno for the cheetah?
Well, in the Serengeti, where there are about 300 wild cheetahs, there are about a million plus prey species. So hundreds of thousands of Thompson gazelles, Grant gazelles, lots of smaller antelopes become their menu. They also eat on African scrub hares and smaller animals that roam around. In Kuno Palpur, unless we rehabilitate black buck herds or bring in 50,000 chinkaras or Indian gazelles to become a part of their diet, they're going to be forced to try and hunt spotted deer and sambar deer, which are forest animals and are not animals that will herd up in groups of 500 where the cheetah can sprint at 100 kilometers to bring one down. It's going to be a tough one to learn and watch from. And I think it's a huge headache for those who are going to monitor the freedom of these cheetahs in 3 months.
So wouldn't wild instinct, you know, or just hunger, survival, not just trigger this hunting? Yes, I know you're saying it's all new, and probably we're asking, should we have made it easier for them to adjust? But how different is a spotted deer, or how similar is it to a small antelope? How much of an adjustment will it be for these cheetahs to switch over to this, sorry, lack of a better word, new diet?
I think it'll be a big adjustment, because the spotted deer can disappear in thick forest. And the male spotted deer has large antlers, and he can turn them round and he can injure a cheetah. Remember, cheetahs suffer from injuries, and when they have injuries, they are normally fatal because they are very delicate. Their legs are really important to their speed, and they cannot afford any injury in their natural run of life within the habitat they occupy. So it's really important to manage their food in terms of the fact that our smaller antelope require breeding farms. We need to set up breeding farms for chinkara and black buck. We haven't done that. We don't allow private entrepreneurs to do that. Yet we want to bring in and make history by bringing cheetahs. Let's open the whole thing out then. Let's create grassland. Let the government come out and say we are converting woodland to grassland, and we are going to create these huge areas for cheetahs. That is our priority number one. But can they do this according to the law?
Well, let history not judge us harshly. But talking about how vulnerable they are, the other basic fact that comes up if you just do a basic search, basic general knowledge as we did growing up, was that cheetahs don't do very well under stress. They're a species that is supposedly, correct me if I'm wrong, breeds poorly in captivity in the wild. They are a highly endangered species, and their numbers have been coming down.
Declining. Their numbers are declining at 1 to 2% a year. Their population is 6,500 to 7,100. They've done very badly in terms of breeding till 1955. In fact, there were no cases except one in Akbar's reign in the 16th century. So it was after that that there were successes in breeding in South Africa and Namibia. But it is a very bad breeder. There's a 95% mortality of cubs in the Serengeti. That means only 5% of the cubs born survive till adulthood. These are the problems of the cheetah, and these problems it faces because it's susceptible to disease. Its genetic structure is very similar to each other. It's quite identical, because there was problems 10,000 years ago when there was a wall with the genes and they were going extinct. So they are very fragile. They're very delicate. They catch infections, and we have to be 100% more careful than any other big cat.
So you're basically saying they're susceptible to disease, new environments, their population drops, and they have genetic problems overall. But at the same time, you said that they have been bred in South Africa, for example. Yes, they've never been translocated over continents, but they have been translocated to other countries in Africa. So why would India be any different?
India is different because it doesn't have the open plains. We are translocating the cheetah into what is mainly forest with small patches of grassland. And we have prey species that are normally prey species for leopard and tiger. And we have to see how in this minefield, a cheetah is going to walk, hunt, feed, and bring up its cubs. It's a whole different ballgame than translocating to the Mozambique or translocating to private safari parks in South Africa, because those parks in South Africa are fenced in like Pinda. I've visited Pinda. I've watched and seen how a pineapple farm has become an area. I know how many cheetahs are taken out of Pinda. And we need to set a whole new infrastructure to do this in India.
So in South Africa, these are, you know, farms, they're closed off, they enclose these large spaces. But in India, they're actually going to be out in the open eventually.
Yes, Kunopalpur is surrounded by 150 villages. It's got thousands of people around. It's got thousands of feral livestock. It's got village dogs. It's got everything that makes up life in India, which are human beings, forests, all mixed together. Now, we don't have village resettlement programs that have been so successful that we can think that we are going to move out all these villages. The minute you do that, you may allow more and more tigers to come in from Ranthambore. Or one of the cheetahs might hop over to Ranthambore in 2-3 days. God knows what will happen. But you'll have teams following their radio collars, satellite collars, and seeing what happens and when you should tranquilize one that goes too far. And I don't believe in too much tranquilization of big cats. If you tranquilize a big cat too many times, it suffers. It gets traumatized. So there are lots of problems. All these problems will have to be dealt with by the managers and experts who've promoted this idea.
So basically, when you are creating hospitable conditions for the cheetah, the African cheetah, to thrive, you are automatically creating conditions for the tiger, for the leopard, and for the hyena to thrive if you're clearing it out of human habitat, etc. So that's a big challenge. But I want to ask you, Mr. Thapar, when we look at old black and white pictures, we see so many come up of people with cheetahs as pets. You have that famous...
It was a pet for the rich and powerful all over the world.
What does that mean? What does that tell us about the cheetah?
The cheetah is so gentle. It loves human beings. If I'm watching cheetahs in Africa, it jumps into the passenger seat with me. It looks at me, then jumps onto the bonnet.
We have that picture. Let's pull that up, what Mr. Thapar's talking about. Go ahead, sir.
And then it jumps onto the bonnet and uses it as a vantage point to look for its prey and its food. It has never killed a human being. So it was a royal pet. All the rich had it. It was used for hunting. Our princes, especially in Gujarat, have imported hundreds from Africa last year. So this was an animal that was a companion of man for thousands of years. So I don't know about wild populations in India. I know that a lot were imported from Persia and Africa and came as gifts to the emperors in their courts. And this connection with human beings makes it an amazingly gentle animal. I will never forget the moments I spent eye to eye watching a cheetah, because it takes your breath away.
Well, we will end on that note and that image of you looking into the eyes of the cheetah. These are magnificent creatures, and we hope we can give them a home, and we hope, all of us do hope, that they can survive here.
Thank you for
coming on tonight and, pointing out the challenges so that we can go into this huge, very ambitious project, as informed as we possibly can. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So can more Indians also enjoy that experience of being able to actually look a cheetah in the eye without having to travel to Africa to a safari for this? Lots of challenges ahead. How can we ensure these beautiful endangered creatures have a fighting chance at survival? Joining us now, Anish Andheria, CEO of the Wildlife Conservation Trust. Anish Andheria, you heard Valmik Thapar's interview. A big day for Indian conservation, but is there a high price to pay for this? Are we endangering? Basically, the question is, how far are we going to go for this? Are we endangering our own indigenous species at the cost of introducing an exotic species?
So to start with, we have not respected our native species that live in the grasslands. As a result, the great Indian buster, the lesser florican, the hyena, the wolf, and a lot of other species that live in the grasslands, have their populations have dwindled. So we haven't done enough for them anyways. Now, coming to cheetahs, yes, in Africa, there is large amount of prey. Yes, the mortality of cheetah is 90-95%. Of course, and that a lot of people have studied cheetahs for decades now. You can't copy-paste the biodiversity and the composition of species that is there in Africa. You cannot copy-paste the kind of social structure that is there in Africa. In Africa, wildlife is treated as commodity. You could actually buy a cheetah and put it in your backyard and call tourists, and you can even feed the cheetah artificially by baiting it with injured prey. All that is possible there. In India, the strength of our country is that we are living alongside tigers. I come from Maharashtra, and I know of a place which is to the east of Tadoba, which has almost 80 tigers living alongside human beings. There are 605 villages there and 80 tigers. Surely there is conflict there. Surely there are eating cattle, but the government is compensating, and the tiger population has only gone up in the last 10, 15 years. So the tiger is about, I would say, 5 to 6 times larger than the cheetah. So the social acceptance, India is a very unique country. So as far as the problems that people are foreseeing from communities, I don't see that happening. There
no, no,
will be
how
conflict.
Do you say you don't see that happening, Mr. Andrea? Because India plans, according to this project, we are planning to get 50 more cheetahs over the next years. Where are we going to put them? We don't have the space for our tigers and our lions and our leopards currently. We are always reporting horrific stories of man-animal conflict, leopards being burned. Come on. Seriously, you can't say we do not have that problem. You don't
Sarah,
see that.
We have problems, but I'll tell you, numbers don't lie. And the tiger population over the last 15 years has gone up. I'm not talking about absolute numbers that the government talks about, but we are working on the ground. We know that the tiger population has definitely gone up in the areas that we are working in, Madhya Pradesh and Maharashtra. And it is true even of the Uttarakhand and the Kaziranga area, and obviously
Correct.
The Western Ghats.
But this is unique. Mr. Thapar is pointing out is that we cannot have leopards and tigers in the same area, which is what I'm asking you.
So I'm telling
we
you,
are home
no,
to the tigers,
so talking,
which other countries aren't. Where will they put these 50? Cheetahs.
Okay, fine. So I'll tell you, the best tiger habitats are the best leopard habitats. You talked about leopard. We are talking about cheetahs right now. So tigers and leopards are living next to each other in some of the most dense tiger habitats. In fact, some of our studies have shown that in protected areas, there are 3 leopards per tiger. So size is very different. Tigers kill anything that they can overpower.
The point is, the leopards and the tigers don't live, coexist with a cheetah.
Correct. So, first of all, the best cheetah habitats are not the ideal tiger habitats. Kuno is a different place. There is a history
yes,
in Kuno.
Yes, how do we replicate Kunos? If you're going to get 50 cheetahs is my question. Just move on. My question to you as a conservationist would be, do you believe that the price that we've put in, I'm sure this is not an inexpensive project, is worth it given the fact that we have a poor record on conservation elsewhere? Or there's an opportunity cost of everywhere we choose to spend our budgets.
Correct, you're right. And Shivpur, for instance, is a place which is loaded with malnourishment. There are a lot of other issues there. There is no way that people are getting enough livelihoods there. When lions were, planned here, the communities on their own went out in 1998. 24 villages vacated Kuno. That is how the core of Kuno is 748 square kilometers with hardly any people there. But it was done by the people because they were living in a bad situation. Now, cheetah being introduced there can actually be a boost to economy of the local communities. But we have to do many things right, which means that people from Bombay, Delhi, should not come and start buying land and setting up hotels there and making millions of rupees and not transferring it to the local communities. But if we are able to somehow make sure that the livelihood goes up, first and secondly, Kuno is not the ideal habitat. It was prepared for the lion.
Yes.
It was vacated. There was a lot of infrastructure and lot of
that's very problematic, very troublesome, as we said in that interview. I want to ask you one last thing. The Prime Minister is quoted as saying,
hold on for a minute.
I just want to understand this. Prime Minister is quoted as saying, I'm running out of time, that the cheetahs will sprint again in KNP. It will restore grassland ecosystems and boost biodiversity. How does bringing in an African cheetah restore grassland ecosystems?
Right. So now I would separate those two sentences. Cheetah will run wherever it wants to run, but the grassland habitat can be brought back if the government puts systems in place, not in Kuno. There have to be other places and almost 1,000 to 2,000 square kilometers of areas where people will be there. But you'll have to create those places and that
how is the question? I want to just quickly, a very short answer. Are we playing God? Can we fool Mother Nature? Are we gambling with a delicate ecosystem? Will we see the fallout of this in the decades to come?
Yeah, we will see the fallout of it. But which direction, we don't know. And we'll have to see. It's an experiment. If it works, fantastic. If it doesn't, we should have enough courage to pull out of it. Experiments are like this. So it will take 20, 25 years to comment on this. But if before that, if we know that the animals are not doing that, then we have to pull out of it. That's it. But experiments have to be done.
Hopefully history will judge us all kindly. Thank you so much, Anish Andheria. Thank you all for joining us on Left, Right and Center. Good night.